So yeah, my father's he's a religious. It's called a Catholic. It's a type of Christian. It's actually that's how I grew up. I went to Catholic school. And I went to a cloister every Sunday till I was 18. And it's how I grew up. I was younger. I was like very into it. Whatever. It's a kid. That's what I grew up with. And as I got older, so I started to I started to question it. These things don't make sense, and this doesn't add up, and certain things you ask a teacher, and they just like, oh, you just have to believe it. No one gives you answers. Just tell you, okay, you just have to believe it. Like, yeah, you're right. It doesn't make sense because it's not true. But they don't tell you it's not true. They just tell you, you just have to believe it. And b'chlal, anyways, like as I got older, you know, teenager, I was around your guys' age. And I got older, and it was like 16, 17, and I'm really like wondering, you know, really trying to figure out what's the truth. Like, I decided that that Christianity is not true, but I have no one I can go to and speak, no one to go to and speak to. Chlal, if I'm going to raise questions against it, my father probably would have got really upset with me, so I wasn't like so vocal about doubting Christianity. So just on my own, I was doing my own research into religion or however you want to call it, trying to figure out whose religion is right, who's the right one, who's correct. So I'm learning about different religions. But Yiddishkeit, I never looked into. So this is like my mother's a Jew, and I didn't get along with my mother, so I figured, like off the bat, I was like, Judaism isn't. That's probably wrong. They don't have it right. And I was basically at a point where I didn't know. B'chlal, I didn't know anything. Like even just Eibishter. Okay, so other garbage they make up fine. But even Eibishter, I'm not sure if does it exist. Eibishter, I'm not sure. Then comes I was 18, and it was my last year of high school. And it was a couple months into the year. Actually, it was around this time. Next week. This was 5 years ago. And with that, I was a bit of a troublemaker in my school, and they kicked me out. I was expelled. And it was a lot of excitement.
I'm not
going to
ask why, right?
Not going to ask why, but I will say that I didn't just walk out. I had my own special escorts and flashing lights. It was a big student going over there when they kicked me out of the school. And fine. So then about a week later, I got a big argument with my father, and he like told me to leave the house. So whatever. So no longer living at my parents' house. I got my own apartment, and I had the apartment for about two months or so. And then I got evicted. I was evicted from my apartment. It means they kicked me out of the apartment.
Why?
And because I was working the job, and I got fired from my job. And I was basically like realizing, like, you know, I have all these things within a couple of months. I kicked out of school, and my house, and my job, and my apartment, and like nothing's working out for me. So if you can imagine, it's like very like stressful. Doesn't begin to describe like the situation I was in. And I really, I just started thinking, I don't think this place is for me. There's nothing going for me here in this town. So, like, that's it. I'm going to leave. I had a car, and I had some money saved up. And I figured, okay, I'll get my car. I'll start driving, and I'll figure out, like, where do I belong in this world? Who am I? Where do I belong? You know, what's my place? So I started driving. I had, like, a final goal, like, maybe I'll go to California. But it wasn't, like, in a rush. It was just, you know, when I get there, I'll get there. So my first major stop was going to be coming here to New York. It's New York City. It's big, you know, obviously it's a big famous city. And I had only been to New York a few times in my life, so I thought I'll come here and, like, you know, hang out. I didn't really have any plans what I'm going to do. I'm just going to drive around and, like, do whatever with myself. And I just, like... So I got here to New York after about a week. And I was just hanging around New York. I've been mainly around Manhattan. I had my car, actually, my car was parked near Atlantic Mall. And one night I had nowhere to sleep. So I was, okay, I'll sleep in my car, you know. So I took the subway, and from coming up from that subway stop over there, I was able to see my car. My car was there for parking the same place for a few days. So I was able to see my car from the subway stop. I came up from the subway, from the stairs. I looked to see where my car was, and where my car was a white car, and parked in there, it was a black car. So I just, like, started, like, freaking out, like, where's my car, like, what's going on, like, what, like, not like I owned that much stuff, because I was just driving around in a car, but, like, what I did own was in my car, like, my clothes and whatever it is I had was in my car. And I just had with me, basically, a backpack, just with, like, one change of clothes, and everything else is in my car. And, like, I thought someone stole my car, and I was like, wow, someone stole my car, it's not so fancy, like, so it turned out that my car was towed. I found out, I went to a police station, and turned out my car was towed, and they said it was parked illegally. So I didn't have, it cost a lot of money to get it out, basically, and I had already run out of money. Like, I'd already, like, come to New York and just, like, spend all my money. And that was, like, it's a lot of money to get out. Every day they add more, they add, like, another fine to it every single day you don't come take your car. And so then I was basically left homeless. I had, like, nowhere to go. Oh, my phone, punk that day, my cell phone service was disconnected because I didn't pay the bill. So I was, like, I was stuck, like, in Manhattan. So I really had no idea what to do. And I was, like, literally homeless and didn't really know anybody here. And I just kind of just, like, started doing what a homeless person does, looking for a place to sleep and trying to get food and whatever. And for about a week, I was just kind of going around, sleeping on park benches and the subway. And this, by the way, this was just so you know the time period, this was Adar, so it was really, really cold out. It was really, really cold. So you can imagine sleep on a park bench in Adar is not so wonderful. But whatever, this is what I was doing. One day I'm walking past, I'm in Manhattan in the city, like in the, what do you call it, Times Square. I was near Times Square, and I walked past a Starbucks, and I saw it says Starbucks, you know, they have the hours, like every store, you know, has the hours on the front. So that it's open basically almost the whole day. It just closes for like 1 hour, like from like 4 to 5 or something, 5 to 6. So I thought, okay, fine, like I'll go into Starbucks, and I'll put my head on the table. I'll like pick a table in the back, I'll put my head down on the table and like take a nap and like actually sleep somewhere that's warm. Like, what's the worst they're gonna do? So a worker comes over and says like, hey, you know, wake up, you know, get out of here. It's like, what's the worst thing that's gonna happen? It's fine. So I went into Starbucks. Later that day, I came back and I went there, and so I just put my head down on the table. Just put my head, you know, like down, like the way you rest, you know, in the middle of Seder, and I just like went to sleep. So I don't know how long it was. Well, I really don't remember what time it was. If I slept for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, I don't know. But when I woke up, so sitting at the table next to me, there was a boy there. He was around 16 years old, and he's wearing a yarmulke. So I was like, okay, fine. Okay, this kid's Jewish. Okay, my mother's a Jew, so I'll start a conversation with him. And I tell him my mother's a Jew, and okay, it's a nice connection. And then I'll like tell him my situation that I'm in, this matzav of being homeless, and like I like not really homeless, I'm just like stuck, and like I just need, you know, just like try to get like basically try to get like a warm bed to sleep in and like a real meal, you know, like try to, you know, talk to him, shmooze. So I start talking to him, and I was like, hey, excuse me, are you Jewish? And he's like, obviously. I said, oh, my mom's a Jew. So he says, so you're Jewish? And I was like, me? No, I'm not Jewish. He's like, no, your mother's Jewish, you're Jewish. I was like, no, listen, I was baptized and I went to Catholic school and I went to church. I don't believe in any of that stuff, but so I don't even believe in God, but I'm definitely not Jewish. He's like, no, it doesn't matter if your mother's Jewish, you have a Jewish soul. So that was like your chiddush. I've never heard like people, b'chah, I never heard people speak about like your soul. Like I never like really like heard people speak about such things. And so I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. And we started talking, and for a while I didn't really care what he's telling me. I'm just like, you know, listening in and like nodding my head, yeah. Until I could eventually like ask him like, yeah, maybe I could like get a place to stay for a few days. And yeah, but then basically at one point he asks me, he says, have you ever heard of the Lubavitcher Rebbe? And I said, I don't know who that is. He's like, no, I'm sure he's very famous. Probably you've heard his name before. He tells me the Rebbe's name. It doesn't sound familiar. He says, okay, I'll show you a picture. I'll show you a picture, and probably you'll recognize him. He's very famous. Probably you've seen him before. He takes out his wallet. He has, you know, like in the part where you have like your ID, has a picture of the Rebbe. And it's one of the pictures where the Rebbe was looking right at the camera. But it's not like stamp. You know, it's like anywhere you look at the picture, you see like the Rebbe's looking at you. But it's not like stamp, like when a person looks at the camera. You know, like when you need to say this, you know, those pictures, you really feel like the Rebbe's looking at you. And I remember looking at the picture and like...
Don't you have that picture?
I lost it recently. I used to always carry it with me. Lost it. Very upset that I lost it, actually. I looked at the picture, and I had never, like, I don't think I ever even, like, saw a picture of, like, I knew such a thing as Jews that have beards and wear, you know, wear, like, a hat like this. I knew such a thing, like, existed, but, like, I never actually, like, saw it before this. But, like, it didn't matter, whatever, I saw the picture that felt like whoever this rabbi is, like, this is, like, someone really special. Like, it felt like he's looking at me, like, I never ever heard of him before. And so this bacher saw basically, I couldn't take my eyes off the picture. So he's just like, here. He's like, here, you can have this picture. Fine. So he gave me the picture. I was like very excited to have it. I stuck it in my wallet. And after seeing the picture of the Rebbe, so then I was thinking like, okay, maybe I should listen to really what he's telling me. Maybe like he's actually telling me something. So the next thing he says is, I'd already told him my situation. So he says, listen, if you don't have anywhere to sleep, you don't have any food to eat, you could go to a place called 770. So I said to him, I said, you know, what's that? I thought he was going to tell me about like a homeless shelter or something. He tells me, he says, listen, it's Orthodox. It's a big Orthodox synagogue. It's the main synagogue of the world. And he says, it's the main synagogue of the whole world. And he says, listen, you go there and just go in there and like tell someone you're Jewish and like that you need help and they'll take care of you. And I was like, okay, sounds weird. And he's like, and listen, if nothing else, you know, there's like a lot of benches. You could really just like sleep on a bench or something. He's like, you could just go there. Like, just go there. You'll see. So I was like, okay, fine. And anyways, okay. So fine, I'll go there and at least find something to eat, something to drink, whatever, somewhere to sleep. And like, okay, like also, like I thought, I'm gonna meet this rabbi. Like, I'm gonna go there, I'm gonna meet this rabbi. I wanted to meet this person. And fine, so we go to get on the subway. And now the last thing really I had was a subway. I had a subway card. That was like all the money I had. So I got on the subway, and we're coming here. Actually, I remember I had to get off. I fell asleep on the subway, and someone woke me up and said how there was construction, so the subway stopped in here, and you have to get on the bus, and then the bus is going to take you. It's going to take you where you have to. So I was like, okay. Like, I never used public transportation in my life. I come from a small city. Like, we have, like, buses, but it's not like New York with subways and buses and shuttles and, like, all kind of stuff. So I, like, have no idea, like, what to do, and there was just, like, two different buses. The person's like, depending on which way you go, you have to take this bus or that one. I was like, I don't know, like, I have no idea. So I just got on one, and I was like, okay, whatever, if this bus takes me there, so fine. If not, so then whatever, like, if I don't go to that synagogue, so fine, like, so be it. Like, so I got on the bus, and the bus I was going, I asked the driver, is this bus going to Kingston Avenue? So he says, yeah, it's in like X amount of stops. So I was like, okay, fine, good. And I actually remember like sitting, sitting at that very front seat, like right behind where the bus driver sits, and like asking him like every stop, is this Kingston Avenue? Is it like every single one? And so I got off. And so this Bach in Starbucks had told me, he said, you'll see a building and, you know, there's like a couple stairs going down and you see like a lot of guys like going in and out, like guys with like hats and beards and they're going in and out. So just go into that building. That's the place. So I was like, okay, fine. So the shuttle let off on this side of the street right here, like straight across from 770. So I remember, because I remember seeing 770 across the street. Because I remember, like, first seeing the dreidel by the JCM. So I was like, okay, I'm probably in the right neighborhood. And then I saw, like, I saw this, like, a lot of people coming in and out of a building. So I was like, okay, that's probably the place. So it's pretty crazy. It was just like, okay, that's the place. Like, that's where I'm going to go. So... By the way, I knew what a dreidel was. We grew up in my house. I celebrated Hanukkah growing up. It wasn't like we ever did it for us. It was like my mother would sit with us when on Kratzmach when we would whatever, she does some open presents and things. So then we would like stand with her, you know, by the menorah and sing, you know, whatever this song is, and light the candles, you know. Also, when I was really little, we used to make a seder every year too. I remember doing that. Anyways, so I come to 770 and I'm just like standing there and I'm just like kind of like I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. I'm not like in the shul, I'm just like in like the hallway in when you first come in. And I was thinking, you know, I remember going to a cousin's bar mitzvah and there was like a thing with like a lot of yarmulkes. You're supposed to like put a yarmulke on or something. So I'm like looking to see if there's like a thing. Like somewhere there should be like a big thing with those things that you put on your head. And I'm standing there for like probably a minute, and it's been like, whatever. I come in there, I'm like, okay, I guess not so out of place because at the end of the day, in 770, there is a lot of people that don't look like they belong in 770. But you know, I didn't have a yarmulke, so that definitely made me like look out of place. So some guy comes over to me and starts speaking to me in Hebrew, and I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. You know, do you speak English? He says, no, hat, cover your head. So I was like, what? And he's like, come. Grabs by the arm, takes me into the shul. And it was this guy, Mishael, who sells the pictures of the Rebbe.
Yeah.
Persian guy, or whatever he is. Bukharian guy. So he gives me a yarmulke. And I was like very excited. It has like, it's like Hebrew alphabet or something. It has like Hebrew letters on it. And he says to me, nu. He says, nu tefillin. I'm like, what? He's like, no tefillin. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I only speak English. I told you, I only speak English. Okay, because I don't know what he's saying to me. And he's like, tefillin, no. He's like, I was like, I'm sorry, I have no idea what you want from me. And he's like, you're Jewish? I said, I am. I don't know. Some kid told me like a couple hours ago that I'm in Starbucks. I'm Jewish. He's like, your mother's Jewish? I said, sure, mother's Jewish. He's like, your grandmother? And I was like, my Bobby? Sure, she's a big time Jew. And he's like, wow, Jews, not film, it's the best day of your life. He's like, really excited. He takes me over to just like, mom just like grabs me by the arm. And it's like, this was, I always estimate the time, it's probably, like right after the Rebbe's minyan, like around, something around 10, maybe like whatever, 10:40, maybe 10:30, 10:40, something. And he takes me to a bacher, Israeli bacher, but whatever, someone spoke English. He has American parents. And he tells him whatever in Hebrew, the time we taught, whatever. So I can already figure out, later I can figure out what he told him. Obviously he told him this is karkafta, like here, you know. And so remember this bacher, he takes me over to where his tefillin are. Now, when I came to 770, so it was like very exciting. Like I grew up going to a cloister. A cloister, Havdil, it's like completely different. It's a very dark place. First of all, people go there once a week. You're there for like an hour, and the lights are very dim. and like everyone just like sits there, and the galach just like talks and says prayers and whatever garbage he does, and like it's like very kalt, and it's very depressing. And like here I come into, this is the first time I had been to like a reform place before, you know, which is like the same thing as the church. And I'm just saying it is, and it looks the same. It's the same with the carpet floors and the stained glass windows. It's the same exact, look the same thing as the church. Yeah, I come to 770. And it's a lichtige place, and there's like tons of people running all over the place, and there's people talking, and there's people like, I think these people are praying, and these people look like they're learning, and there's food, and there's a bottle of Smirnoff on a table, and it's like 10:30 in the morning, and there's people like drinking alcohol, and I'm like, wow, like this is like what a place of worship that they call in English, it's called place of worship. This is like what it should look like. This is what it should be like. This is a vibrant place. So now I'm like with this bacher, and he's like pulling out this like thing, it's like box and these things, and now like I'm looking around, I'm like seeing like, okay, like everyone has like strap on their arm, this box on their head, and like this like sheet like with these strings and stuff, and people are like shaking around and like like saying a lot of like weird words. And I started thinking, if you guys have heard such a thing as a cult, I started thinking that this was a cult, which is basically like a group that you don't want to be a part of. They brainwash you and make you think like really crazy stuff, and they like take all your money and like whatever. So I started thinking like this maybe is a cult. Like cults, one thing they do in cults is they do weird stuff. Like they do weird stuff in cults. So I was like thinking like this is like some weird thing over here, and like maybe it's a cult and whatever. I'll do what this Jew wants, and then like I'm gonna get out of here because like that can't be part of a cult. So he asked me, am I left-handed, right-handed? And I'm like, this is so weird. And roll up my sleeve. And he says to me, he says, repeat after me, and then don't speak until I say. And I'm like, this is so weird. I was really thinking, like, this is the weirdest thing like I've ever done in my life. And he starts to say the bracha. And right away, Jesus says the first couple words, and I recognize these words from this song that I would sing every year when we would light them in there on Hanukkah. I didn't know it's a bracha. I didn't know what the words meant. It was just, I knew it was a song that my, from hearing my mother sing it every year, I knew those words. So I got like really excited, and I just like said the words really fast, and I made a Shachianu. I said Shachianu. You say Shachianu on Hanukkah. So then I made the right bracha. And whatever, like the whole thing of it is a cult and I have to get out of here, like I've just forgot about it, like just like went away. And took one thing and they got me in. So after whatever, he gave me English siddur. You know, normally they're mitzayim, so we just like say the words with them, whatever, you know, in Hebrew, and this person repeats after us, right? He would have, for whatever reason, thought to give me English siddur, and he just had me say the whole Shema, all three parts of it. And I remember while I was starting to say Shema, so I remember starting to get like a feel, this like certain feeling in my arm, and I remember like thinking like maybe this thing is like wrapped really tight, so it's like making like, you know, like when you like blood flow gets cut off, you know, it's like pins and needles feeling. That's kind of what it felt like. It like wasn't that, but it felt kind of like that. So I was thinking like it's wrapped really tight, and then I remember going further through Shema, and I started to get the same feeling in my head, and I started like I was like, wow, like how, like that's not possible, like it's really like how could it be so tight, and whatever. Basically, like it was really really intense, crazy thing. I'm not gonna explain the whole thing of it, because it anyway sounds weird. But I guarantee it's what happened. And then when I said emes, but I said truth, because I said in English. So I remember basically seeing. I don't know how long it lasted. It could have been like it was like just like a second, but I don't really know. But I remember like basically seeing all like major events from my life. Maybe it was my whole life. Maybe it was made. But I just basically remember seeing like a lot of things from my life from as far back as I can remember. And yeah, like it was very weird. It's very weird to describe. Like it wasn't like I lived it, but I don't know if it was like a video. But it was like I couldn't really describe how it was, but I basically saw. I saw it. However, I saw it. I saw it. And the cool thing was is that I saw how every single thing I did. That when I was a little kid, I did this. So then that made this thing happen, and then this thing happened, and everything led everything I did always led to the next thing until everything led to me to stand here. And not that I thought that this was like the whole like thing of my life was to come here and be here, but that just that I realized that wow, everything is Hashgacha Pratis. I heard of such a thing as divine providence. I learned this in school. This is also Goyim also, I don't know if they believe it, but officially in their beliefs of most Christianity, it's like something they're supposed to believe. So I knew such a thing as divine providence. So I remember thinking to myself, everything in this world is divine providence. God exists, whoever he is. I'm a Jew, whatever that means. This thing, the Torah, I didn't know what that was. I knew the Jews follow a thing called Torah. This thing, Torah, that's the truth. And I have to do whatever a Jew has to do. So it was like, you can imagine, it was like really out of this world. Like I was mamish like flying.
You know what
like,
that guy is, huh?
I was like soaring. I'm like floating, like I'm like mamish, like I'm just like it's the most like intense thing happened in my life. And this he says to me, he asks me, do you want to learn something? So I said, what are we gonna learn? He said, we're gonna learn Torah. So I was like, okay, so let me ask you, is this what a Jew is supposed to do? He says, yeah, for sure, every Jew is gonna learn, has to learn Torah, there's no question about it. So I said, okay, so let's learn something. So I remember we went and sat down in the back of 770, and he's just like flipping through. We didn't actually learn anything. He was flipping through like some Sfarim or something, I guess trying to figure out what are we gonna learn. And I remember Balabas came over and started speaking to him in Hebrew, telling him something. And he says, so then this bacher like, looked like he like, light, you know, like light bulb lit up. And he's like, oh, do you want to go to yeshiva? And I was like, what is it? He's like, it's this building, it's a wonderful place. It's only a block from here, it's right up the street. And we'll go there and there's rabbis and classes and food and everything that you need is there. So I was like, okay, well let me ask you, is this what a Jew is supposed to do? He says, yeah, for sure, every Jew has to go to yeshiva, there's no question. So I was like, okay, so let's go there. So we came over here to Adar Torah, which is across the street from here, and takes me up to Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Goldberg, and just like, I don't know what he told him, because it's not like he knew anything about me. All he knows is that he just, you know, that I was a Karkafti. He didn't know like anything about me, so I guess that's what he told him. And they were finishing davening, and so Rabbi Goldberg, he says to me, he says, did you eat breakfast? It's the first thing he says to me, he didn't ask my name or anything, he just said, did you eat breakfast yet? So I said, no, actually, I haven't really eaten a meal in a while. And he says, so you have to go eat breakfast before anything else? Right, you should go eat breakfast. He told a bacher to come, show me where the lunchroom is. Then in the lunchroom, aside from the fact that I was excited to like see food and eat real food, I was like, it was like kosher food, wow. Like I thought it was like a rabbi blessed the food. Like no idea what it means kosher. So it was like, a bacher asks me, we're eating. And of course, everyone's asking me, like, you know, what's your name? Where are you from? It's not like a big chiddush for like a random person to be in a Adar Torah. Like every other day, like a random person comes through. People asking how, you know, who are you? What's your name? Where are you from? And so I didn't really tell anyone. Like didn't tell anyone. I'm just like coming off the street. They didn't like just give so many details. Bacher says to me, listen, there's, you know, the lunch, breakfast is almost over, and there's gonna be soon a Gemara Shir. Do you want to come to the Gemara Shir? I was like, what is that? It's Gemara Shir. I never heard of like such a thing. And he's like, oh, it's a class on the Talmud. Did you ever hear the Talmud? And I was like, yeah, I think it's like some old Jewish book, right? He's like, yeah, it's an old Jewish book. So whatever, there's a class on it. So you come to the class. I was like, okay, fine, why not? Came to the Shir. And so whatever, the teacher comes in and something he also is like asks me like, what's your name? And everyone else asks me what's the name. So tell him my English name. And I tell him my English name, and he says, I said my name's Matt. And he says, no, your Hebrew name. It's like, no one, and the other Bacham didn't ask me what my Hebrew name was. It's like, Hebrew, I don't know, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, when every Jew, when they're born, their mother gives them a Jewish name. I was like, I don't know, my name's Matthew. Like, that's, I know it comes from Hebrew, but I don't think I have a Hebrew name. Is it okay, fine, how's your Hebrew? I was like, I don't know Hebrew. Yeah. Okay, fine. He's like, so you try to, whatever, listen in, follow along, you know. So after the Shir.
Did you understand anything?
Not really. I really didn't know what's going on. And like, Bechlal was like, I was just like, why are they learning such things? Like, whatever. So afterwards, after the Shir, so Rabbi Wurzburg, who is the Magid Shir. So he tells me, oh, you know, come with me, you know, let's talk. Takes me to his office, and he says to me, he's like, so you don't have a Jewish name? I was like, no, my name's Matt. My name's Matthew. So he says, he's like, so you're Jewish? And I was like, I don't know, everyone keeps telling me that I'm Jewish today, because my mother's Jewish, so that makes me a Jew. He's like, yeah, sure, of course, if your mother's a Jew, then you're Jewish. I was like, okay. He's like, and you don't know Hebrew? I was like, no. And so then he tells me, he's like, okay, he's like, so first of all, you have to get a Jewish name. He says, you have to call your mother, and you have to get it, you have to tell her that you want to tell her you need a Jewish name. So I was like, okay, yeah, right. I didn't speak to my mother in like 3 months now, so like, forget about it. I'm not talking to my mother. And he's like, and also, he pulls out a paper and he shows it in front of me, and he says, do you recognize anything on this paper? So it was Aleph Beis. It was a copy from the Siddur. So I was like, oh, this means take all. This means you lose everything. This means you. You know. As I remembered from Nun Gimel. I remembered from the Dreidel. That's the ones I picked those ones out. And whatever, he thought that was pretty funny, and he's like, okay, he taught me. I remember he gave me a pen and he gave me the paper and he told me the name of each ice, and I wrote down what each one was called. I still have that paper. It's like very funny how like what I wrote down for each thing, because not everything I wrote down what its actual name was. I wrote what I heard, what I thought I heard him say. So like, it's a paper. I look back sometimes. It's like, so afterwards he took me to he. Ever, I, whatever. I was there for another hour or two, and then I left. I didn't know you stay in yeshiva. I didn't know like what. I still didn't know what yeshiva was. I just knew it's a building. There was rabbis and classes and food. Like this Israeli told me. Like I didn't know it's a place people stay and learn. I didn't know like this is where you live. This is where you know sleep, breathe. So whatever. But I had this like new chayas to continue my journey. And I was like, hey, I'm a Jew, and so I have to always have my head covered. And that is, and I knew that you know. That you don't eat you know certain stuff from like pork and shellfish or whatever, certain things that I just like knew. And it was like fine, so like you know I had a new chayas. I'm like, okay, I went to Manhattan to go to the library. I didn't know there's libraries here, two libraries in East Parkway, not that you guys should know about it. But so I went to Manhattan where I knew of a library.
How many years ago was this?
This was 5 years ago. Oh, wow. 5 years ago. So I went there. Why? Because I figure I'm gonna look online. I'm gonna go to the net and try to find the. You know, you can go to these websites where they have like jobs. They list jobs. So find like a quick, easy job. I can make some cash. Whatever. The washing dishes, something for a week. Get some cash. Get my car from the impound, and I'll continue my journey. I'll continue going. You know. And so I went there and I spent hours and hours and hours and I couldn't find every job, even like the most simple job, they wanted you to have at least a high school diploma. So I'd been kicked out of high school, so I didn't have that. So I was like, the library closed, I had to leave. And I was like, really like, wow, like what's gonna be like? I'm like stuck like on the streets of New York. Like, you know, it's scary, it's a very scary thing. I was like, okay, fine, listen, I'll go back to that synagogue, and I'm gonna, and whatever, I'll sleep there on a bench, you know, this Mendy told me yesterday, I could, you know, so why not? So I remembered the 3 train, Kingston Avenue, so I went to the subway, I went to swipe my card, and my card was insufficient fare, and I had no money to add to it, and whatever, it wasn't shy to jump the stiles, the police, and whatever stuff. So I wouldn't care. I would just jump the stiles. Like it wouldn't matter. But whatever. It didn't. I couldn't do it. So now I was really like, wow. Like I'm like gonna become like a real like. Till now I didn't really consider myself homeless. I mean I was. But I didn't really consider myself. And now I was like, wow. Like I'm really gonna become like a homeless person. And like what am I gonna have to do? Like how am I gonna survive? How am I gonna get food? How am I gonna get money to like. Where am I going to sleep? Like, what am I going to do? It was really, really scary. Like, I felt like that's like the end of my life. Like, that's it. From here on out, I'm going to be like a bum. And I was like, whatever. You know what? Last night, I also pretty much felt the same way. And I went to sleep. I found a place to sleep. And when I woke up, things worked out. It was a really good day. So that's what I'll do. I'll find a place to sleep. So I started walking. And I got to Times Square, and this time I saw Starbucks in Times Square itself, and this one's open 24 hours. So I had the same idea. I'll go in there, I'll take a nap again, and figure things out. It was still early, and it was like around 7 o'clock. I wasn't really so tired, so I'm just kind of sitting there, like thinking to myself, what should I do? Like, I have to make a plan. And so I'm thinking, I'll ask someone for a quarter, and I'll go to the payphone, and I'll call my parents and tell them, listen, like, I'm sorry for anything I did in the past, but I really need you to come get me. Like, I'm stranded in New York City, and I just need your help. Like, of course, this is my parents. Like, of course they'll do it, you know? Like, if I really need them, they'll help me. So I was, like, thinking back and forth. Should I do it? Should I not do it? I had, like, a little bit too much, I don't know how you want to call it. Yeshus, whatever. I had a little bit too much, like, I have to, like, give in to my parents and show them they were right, you know? After all this time, they were right, and I was wrong. Like, it was, like, struggling back and forth. Should I do it? Should I not do it? And I was at the moment where I was, like, I decided to myself, that's it. I'm gonna ask this guy next to me. I'm going to ask him for a quarter, and I'm going to go find a payphone and call my parents. And as I made that decision, I'm going to do that. So, like, if I'm sitting here, so the door coming in was right there where the doorway is. So I was watching people coming in and out. I could see everyone coming in. So at that moment, in comes a guy with a beard and a hat. And I was like, oh, look, hey, look, it's like a fellow Jew. Like, I knew it was like a thing, like, Jewish people, like, oh, like, they all, like, consider each other brothers, like, you know. And I was like, oh, look, this is one of my brothers. Like, I hope he sits near me so I can tell him, like, you know, so I can tell him that I'm also Jewish. And I got, like, really excited about it. And, yeah, he sat right at the table next to me. And I saw him, and I said, shalom. I said, shalom. And he said, oh, Lechem Shalom, how are you? And I said, oh, I'm doing great. I did this thing for the first time today. And he says, oh, tefillin, mazel, this is amazing. But tell me, you're surely not 13 years old, so how did you come to have your bar mitzvah only now? So I told him, b'kitzur, the ma'aseh, what happened? And he's like, wow, he's like, this is really amazing. But, you know, tell me, where are you sleeping tonight? I said, I don't know, probably, you know, take a rest at this table here. So he said, no, this is ridiculous, you're a yid, you're a human being, you need taken care of. You'll come and you'll stay in my dormitory tonight. So I said, wow, that's really nice of you. So, like, tell me, you know, where do you go to college, university? He says, college, university. He said, that's sitting on your app today. That's called 770. And I learn there every day. And I live right around the corner. You'll come and stay in my dorm tonight. And tomorrow, I'll take you back to that yeshiva. I know the rabbi in charge. And we'll see if we can get you a place to stay in the meantime until, you know, you figure things out in life. Who's this guy? His name's Yaki Benisti. He's a Frenchie. Whatever, like a Frenchie Israeli guy.
I know their names now. You just remember them?
I mean, I spoke to him for a while. I'm saying I knew all these people. First of all, Mishael, I see him every single day when I go to 770. Mendy Bindel, because someone told me who someone we exchanged phone numbers. I'm saying right then and there we exchanged phone numbers. So I have him.
But you didn't have a phone.
I had a phone, but just the disconnected. The service is disconnected. And Yaki Benisti also.
He was who?
Mendy Bindel? No. First of all, I lost his number now because I got a new phone and another new phone. Something. Last time I spoke to him was it was to see him at Rambam in Ein Beis.
He knows that light.
I remember calling him. I remember I called him that night because I got his number. I called his father, and Bach, because they live in Albany now.
Right.
I think he's in California. I don't really know where he is. But there was a Bach in Olathe that year who lives in Albany. He knew. He got given his father's number, and I called his whatever. So. So whatever, so I went and I stayed that night in 1414. He takes me to the Atar the next day. And again, he takes me to Rabbi Goldberg. And Rabbi Goldberg again tells me, like, you know, to go eat breakfast. And so then this Yaki Benisti came down, like, a few minutes later. And he tells me, listen, the rabbi said that you could stay here. You're welcome to stay until you, you know, figure things out. Till you find another, you know, you can move on. And whatever. And he's like, here's my number. I want to stay in touch. You know, I'm learning here this year. So, I was like, fine. So, I wasn't really, like, I just, like, started staying there. Like, no one really, like, gave me a room. Like, there was a shliach there by breakfast. One of the shulchan from the Daratah was there by breakfast. And he, like, overheard, and he's like, oh, there's no empty beds right now in the yeshiva. But if you want, we could find a mattress, and you could stick on the floor in my room, and you could stay there. So, like, I remember even the first week I was there, like, really, no one really even really knew that I was, like, staying there, sleeping there. whatever. So then I like was part of the yeshiva. Like I'm saying, this was. So this whole thing was all in one day. This whole thing was all just within like 24 hours. Like found that I was a yid and I came to them 7 days, put them for the first time. And now I'm in yeshiva, like a bach in yeshiva. Like, oh, like I realize it's the Eibishta. I realize it's everything's Shkach Pratis and Teyes Emes. Like it's all in 24 hours. So I was in yeshiva for about 3-4 months. That was like Hey Yalda or something like that. That first day was Hey Yalda when I came. So I'm like Dalet Hey Yalda. I spent about three, four months in yeshiva. Oh, I found out basically I didn't end up calling my mother. You know, it was just like, you know, the rabbi when I first came in there told me I should call my mother and ask her for a Jewish name. So it happened. So actually that day, that was a Sunday, and punk that day, I remember my phone started ringing and my mother was calling me. I was like, that's weird, like my phone is disconnected, like how's my mother calling me? It's like, whatever, I was like, I'm not going to answer it because she's just going to probably start yelling at me. So next day she's calling me again. So I hopped, probably, she paid for my phone service and she wants to get a hold of me. About a week before that, I had told, when I left my hometown, I didn't tell any of my family. I told a couple friends and I just went. And anyways, I hadn't really been speaking to my family for a while. So about a week before that, like before the whole mice, my car got towed and I was homeless. I had told two of my sisters that I was, you know, on this, you know, journey to find myself, whatever, and that I was in New York, and then I'm hopefully, you know, gonna start driving west. So I figured one of my sisters probably told my mother, and now she's calling me to tell me like whatever, you should just come home. Like, what are you doing? She's calling me every single day. Comes Friday, it's Erev Shabbos. And I was like, I see she's, oh, there it is. Well, you know, like every single day she's calling me. And I was like, whatever, I don't want to talk to her. And I was like, you know what, fine, whatever, I'll pick up. My mother, like, at the end of the day, she's just concerned about me. She wants, you know, it's her son. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll pick up. And anyways, it's almost Shabbos, and I'll tell her it's Shabbos. And she probably doesn't know what that is, but, like, she's a Jew, so, like, I'll explain and she'll understand that I can't really talk.
You were there, like,
so I'll get out of here. I was sleeping there. Yeah, no, I didn't really go to so much shirin because I didn't know I was supposed to go to shir, and like no one would tell me. I would go randomly if I came downstairs and there was a shir, so I would like go into the shir, like just go in and sit there.
What were you doing?
I did a lot of talking with the shliach because I was sharing a room with one of the shulchim, so I like seriously sat for like hours talking to him every day, okay. Saying he like his name is Baruch Leeds. He mamish, like in 1 week I knew so much about Chassidishkeit because he was, yeah, I knew like in 1 week I learned so much about like Chassidishkeit, not like Chassidish, about Chassidishkeit, about the Rebbe and about what it means to be a Chassid and about the other Rebbeim and without the previous Rebbeim and stuff, because we sat there talking to him and he's like just telling me whatever, like general stuff and young clothing of Chassidis and stuff. So but anyways, so I was like, whatever, so I picked up and I was like, as if like I just, you know, as if I hadn't spoken to my mother in months, but I pick up and I was like, oh, hi mom, how are you? Like, you know, what's going on? And she's like, Matthew, where are you? What are you doing? Your sister said you're in New York, you're traveling the country. Like, well, what are you crazy? You should just come home.
Where's your hometown?
Huh?
Where's your hometown?
In Pennsylvania, about 4 hours from here.
What's the city called?
It's called York.
York?
York.
Where is
it
now?
I'm in Camp Garnett. So, what's that?
What are you learning?
I learn.
Here?
I'm in 770. So I was like, she tells me, you should just come home. And I was like, oh mom, don't worry, I'm in yeshiva. So, and I was like, and she's like, you're in yeshiva? And I was like, mom, you know what yeshiva is? And she's like, I'm a Jew, what do you mean? Of course I know what yeshiva is. She's like, what kind of yeshiva is it? And I said, oh, it's with Chabad. She's like, oh, you're with Chabad, that's great. And I was like, you know what Chabad is? And she's like, yeah, I'm a Jew. Like, of course I know what Chabad is. And I was like, wow. Because the truth is not every Yid knows the yeshiva and what a Chabad is. Like, it's not the fact that I didn't know, because I didn't even know I was Jewish, but I'm saying. And then she says to me, she's like, wait a second, it's Shabbos, you can't be on the phone. And I was like, what? How does, like, my mother... Someone had already explained to me that, you know, oh, tonight is Shabbos, and for 25 hours, we don't use our phone, we don't turn the lights, and we don't carry. Someone had already explained to me. So and I was like, wow. I was like, mom, you know about Shabbos? And she's like, listen. She's like, call me back tomorrow. I was like, mom, don't worry, it's not Shabbos yet. She's like, no. She's like, no, don't worry. She's like, call me back. It's probably close. So call me back tomorrow night, or call me on Sunday. So I call my mother back, and I find out the whole thing. My mother grew up keeping Shabbos and keeping, they had whatever at home. They kept kashrus at home, and it's like a traditional family, whatever. And she has a Jewish name, and because I tell her I need a Jewish name, and she tells me, oh yeah, she has a Jewish name and whatever, and just like stuff I never knew. And she tells me that she gave me his name Matthew. She says, I gave his name because it comes from Hebrew. So I'm sure you could find out what the name is in Hebrew. And I was like, yeah, someone already told me that's Matasio. She's like, yeah, that's from Hanukkah. Yeah, that's what I thought was the name. So I was like, yeah. She's like, okay, so that's I gave you that name already. So I just, that should be your name. So, and then later I found out that I thought she was just like making above myself. So she's just like saying that. But I found out because Matthew isn't necessarily like such a Jewish name. It comes from Hebrew. And you look it up in like a book of names. It tells you from Hebrew it means gift. It means gift of God. But like I just thought she's saying that because I thought I had the name because it's generally not Jews don't use this name because it's like a Christian name. So that's why I thought I had the name. Like a year or two ago, I found in like, I have like a, there's like a box in my house that has like stuff from when I was a baby. And I have in there, there's like a calendar. There's a thing like in the world that people do, it's called a baby calendar. And like the first year of a child's life. So then like they write like every time like significant things that the kid does and like, and the kid gets his first tooth and the first time the kid smiles, whatever. It's like they keep track of your first year of your life. It's supposed to be like a nice memory thing, whatever. In the back, I had looked at this thing like a million times in my life. What I never noticed was in the back, like on the the back cover, on the inside of the back cover, it says letter from mommy, letter from daddy. And I had never noticed it before. And I was reading through it, and I saw in there, yeah, my mother Taka writes, she said she's giving me the name Matthew, which means gift of God, and it comes from Hebrew. And she gave me this name so I should know I have a Jewish heritage. And I was like, wow, like I can't believe, like I was like, wow, very stark. And cause my mom's not such a Jewish woman. I'm saying she's Jewish like the way she acts, but she's not like, she's not obviously like so firm. But I'm saying she married a guy, so she's clearly. If you meet her, you're like, wow. You like think she's a real yente. She's like a real, and she's like a real like Yiddish mama. Like, I feel my friends like, people grow up from like I've met my mother and they're like, wow, like such a Jewish woman, like real Jewish woman. And but I'm saying it comes to you know, Yiddishkeit is not like she's not so okay, she lights a menorah every year because saying like what you know like every other Jew does this also. But like the fact she gave me this name because of that I was like really impressed. So fine. So that was that. And like I was in yeshiva and it was like everything like very like right away like so like I wanted to wear a hat and I started growing a beard right away and like I was like only gonna wear I got my car, someone gave me a lot of money to get my car, but like I threw away all like my t-shirts and all my jeans and I'm like I'm only wearing black and white, so this is how chassid is supposed to dress, like this is not like and like no people tell me people were like they're like Matsya, you have to take it easy, like it's like a little too fast. I was like no, this is like when I do something in life, I do it full on, and this is how chassid is supposed to have a beard and dress this way. And I was living in Crown Heights, so Mela, I'm like doing all these things, keeping Shabbos and only eating kosher food and diving 2 times a day. But like at the end of the day, it was like very fast. Even if I hadn't started growing a beard and wearing black and white right away, it still was like very fast. When it wasn't like go? I don't know right away. I started growing right away, so it was like. It was just very fast. I didn't really choose it. It was just because I was here in Crown Heights. But so I basically what happened was I went to go visit my home. It was now a few months later, and the yeshiva was getting ready to go to. They have a camp upstate, and we're getting ready to go there. So I got a shush to go visit home for a few, you know, for a week before we're gonna go to camp. So I went home, and it was what's that?
You just went to school for like
school?
What do you mean?
Like,
pay for tuition.
Oh, for yeshiva? Yeah. No, people don't pay tuition in Hadar Torah. Hadar Torah never turned anyone away because of money. I don't know how they function. I don't know how like the yeshiva still exists. Like hardly anyone's ever paid to go to that yeshiva. Whatever. In Brachos Lev, there's a lot of things that ever said about Hadar Torah. Which is very clear why, like, that they would never have financial problems. Whatever. So I went home to visit, and that week was the week of my class from my high school was graduating. So it was like my friends had graduation parties, like they're graduating, so everyone's making a party. So my friends, like, they hear I'm in town, so they tell me, hey, come, you know, come, you have to see everyone, we didn't see you for a while, like, you know, you disappeared, and like, no one knows where you're at. So I went to go see my friends, and I was already having, like, sveikis and stuff, and like, starting to, like, kind of fed up with the way of living from. And especially when I saw my friends, and I was like, started thinking, like, what's so bad about this? Like, yeah, I'm a Yid, and I'm very proud to be a Yid, and whatever, but like, I have to do all these mitzvahs and all this stuff, and like, wow, it's like so much. Yeah, so I didn't go like with a hat and jacket, but I'm saying I like, yeah, I went to the party with the black and white, the beard, and like, my friends thought it was really cool. They're like, wow, this is so cool. Like, yeah, we heard you like doing some like Jew thing. Like, what is it? Like, people thought it was like really cool, which is probably bad because they thought it was cool. So like, it was like encouraging me to talk more to them and like whatever. So when a week passed and I came back to yeshiva, and yeshiva was leaving a few days for camp, I'd already made up my mind that I'm like gonna fry out and I'm gonna move back home. And my parents told me I could move home. They thought like I was like, you know, living here, like whatever. I like changed and I was more of a mensch. So like they like told me I could move back home. And so whatever. So like I just like packed up my bags and like literally left in the middle of the night because I didn't want to tell anyone in yeshiva because I figured everyone's gonna try to, you know, convince me to stay. So I just like packed my bags, left in the middle of the night, and got on a bus in Manhattan and went home. And it was just like mom is like, just when I got home, like it was like I was home, and like the next day I was home, I just whatever, didn't have a beard anymore, and like next day I stopped there in tzitzis, and next day I stopped wearing a yarmulke. Actually, I remember my mother was actually like, the day I came down without a yarmulke, I came down in the morning to eat breakfast, and my mother was standing, she was standing like, so this is a table in the kitchen, so the sink is right there, and she's standing there washing dishes, and I come in and like I sit down at the table, and she like turns around and looks at me, and she's like, good morning, and she like does a double take, because she like saw I didn't have a yarmulke, and she was like very, very sharp, she's like, huh, you're not Jewish anymore, huh? Like very, like very, very sharp way, and I was like, well, like, come on, like, when's the last time you did what you're supposed to do as a kid? I didn't say that, but I thought, and I was like, so it was just like that. I just like flat out, like, and as fast as I became from, it was just like no longer from. So I was there, and I was home for about a month, and Chaim. And my family went on vacation. Family goes in the frum world, you like go to the Catskills, like it's you like go upstate, you go like to the country, whatever. So Gaim, they have like they everyone in the summer they like go for a week or two, they go to the beach, or whatever, they go somewhere. So my family does that. So they went away, and so I stayed home because I was trying to find a job, and I was trying to figure out how I'm going to go back to high school and finish high school. Couldn't go back to school I went to, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I was 18.
But you also got kicked out of school.
Pretty old, yeah. No? But now you're 23.
No, 18 is how old you are in your last year of high school.
Now you're 23.
Yeah. So my parents were gone, right? I have the whole house to myself. And my friends were going to be leaving in a month, you know, in a month or so to go to college. So I was like, fine. Like, I decided I'm going to throw a party. It's like having my friends over. Like, so whatever. I threw a big party. And it's like the next day, made sure to clean everything up, went around, like, make sure no one would ever know. And my parents, I was gone when my family got back from vacation. And when I came home, so my mother was like waiting by the door, and I was like, it doesn't look too good. And she tells me she wants me to come to the kitchen. You know, she's like, your father and I want to speak to you. And I was like, oh, that's like the worst. Like, that's like when you did something bad, she's like, your father and I want to speak to you in the kitchen. That's the place where like they speak to you. And it's like, and I was like, there's no way they could know about the party. Like, I cleaned everything up. I checked every closet everywhere. Like, so whatever, turned out like the neighbor called them and told them, and like they were like, oh, we thought when we, you know, you were living in Crown Heights, whatever, you living in Brooklyn, this whole thing, and like we thought you changed and you weren't gonna act like this, and you agreed, you know, we agreed to let you move back in here, you know, out tonight, that you're not going to act like that. And I was like, whatever. And we started getting a big argument, and then they were like, whatever. And they're like, if you're not gonna live in this house the way that we've told you, then you can just get out of here. So I was like, fine, I'm gonna get out of here. So I just like grabbed the backpack and like stuffed some clothes in it and just like took off. And whatever. I started sleeping at friends' houses, like, you know, different couch, different, you know, basement every night. And that was my birthday. It was like a week later. And then like another week or two later, a few weeks later, whatever, I was, huh? Oh, this is Av already. So I remember my first year out. This is, wow. Make me think about it. So this is now in Av. And Yud of basing like that. And I was doing something called longboarding, which is basically like skateboarding. It's like a big skateboard. And like they make it, you can go down hills very fast on it. So I was doing that with a friend. And so basically I wasn't wearing a helmet. And now I don't remember any of this. But basically I wasn't wearing a helmet, and my friend was driving in the car behind me, because we were in like, it was like a lot of hills. And then I know the neighborhood where it happened, so it's like a lot of hills. You could literally keep going and going and going. So one of us was in a car, and one of us was on the skateboard, so that we could then drive back up, because we only had one longboard. So I guess it was my turn on the longboard. My friend's driving the car behind me, and so whatever. So he told me I was going more than 35 miles per hour, and I wasn't wearing a helmet. And I guess going around like a corner or something, I lost my balance and I fell, and I hit my head into the street. And basically my friend thought I wasn't alive anymore. And he came over, he said like, whatever, I just wasn't moving. I hit my head on the ground and like flopped a few times and wasn't moving. So he thought I wasn't alive. So he got out of the car, obviously, and like came over and was like shaking me. I don't remember it. I don't remember any. I don't remember any of it. So no, I wasn't. I mean, he woke me up and I wasn't conscious. I was conscious, but I'm saying I don't remember skateboarding. Like I don't remember it. I don't remember any of it. I remember going there with the skateboard, but I don't remember actually skateboarding. So he like was shaking me, and he said he kicked me once, and he's yelling my name. He's like whatever. And after a little bit, he said I came conscious. And I was like, he said I was screaming, whatever. So he thought to himself, so the hospital was like a 5-minute drive. So he figured instead of going on one, he'll just put me in the car and drive me there. Like, it's probably faster. So that's what he put me in the back of his car, he went to the red lights, whatever, he drove me to the hospital. And he came to the ER, and like, he just went inside and like yelled for the doctors like to come, like, it's like my friend's like dying, like, come get him. So the doctors came out, so the stretcher put me on. And they basically saw that I had lost like so much blood, and they basically told my friend, they were like, wherever, like, it's very smart, like, however even close you were, they said it's very smart that you drove him here, because if you wait for ambulance, that's another whatever, more time, and like, who knows, whatever, you could have lost more blood, whatever. So that was like the fact, that was like the ish thing. The ish thing was that he like thought to drive me there instead of like, you know, freaking out, calling 911. He like put me in the car, drove me there. Even then, though, they took what's called a CAT scan, which is basically like an X-ray of your brain. And they basically saw that I had something called hemorrhaging. And, it's can't even explain it. It's whatever, your brain swells up and there's like blood bleeding where it's not supposed to go in your brain, whatever. Your brain swells. And then your brain swells, like, you whatever, a person's the opposite of whatever. It's not good. So they said that I probably had less than 24 hours to live. Now the whole thing was Shkacha Pratis. How did my family find out? So that friend didn't know my family, and like he called some other friends that he thought might know my family, and like no one had any numbers for my family. So what happened? That was a Sunday. So the person called radiologist who looks over these type of scans to like determine what should be done, doesn't work on Sundays, so it gets sent to a different hospital in Philadelphia, which is like 2 hours away. like, you know, on the internet, gets sent to the internet. And he looks at it and then reports back what to do. So that doctor, looking at it, was my father's best friend from medical school. My father's also a doctor. So he saw the name and the town on the thing, and he thought, like, okay, how many Matthew Devlins could there be in York, Pennsylvania? He called to my father, she called straight to my father, and told my father, listen, I have this thing in front of me, and I don't know, but I hope it's not your son, because it doesn't look good, but whatever, it has your son's name on it. So, like, that's how my family found out about it, like, only through this whole, like, weird way. So my father wanted to, of course, my father wanted to have a galach come in, and make shtusim that they do. And my mother said, no. For sure not, he's a Jew, everything the Jewish way, and she called it our Torah. She remembered there's two things, she remembers like, a Jew is like in need, so you say Tehillim, and she remembered like Meshabeach, she didn't know it was called Meshabeach, but she remembered there's like a blessing you say like, when there's like a Torah reading, so she remembered like this thing. So she called it our Torah, so then they were, then called the office here, and the office called upstate and told them about it, and like the whole, it's in Napanak, so like the whole place was like, making a big shturim, saying the Mesifta also, the Mesifta Bachim up there also, saying it's a big shturim going up there, a lot of Tehillim and whatever. And of course, they knew the third thing they're supposed to do, which is to write upon to the Rebbe. So, did all this stuff. And the next day, like the doctor saw I was alive, and they were very shocked that I was alive. And they took me to the CAT scan, and they saw that the hemorrhaging was like going away. It was like clearing up very, very fast. Like, it's like a big pella, like, something that doesn't happen. It's like something that like doesn't. It's very like you would never see it. So they said they couldn't believe I'm alive, but I'll be in a coma for months, maybe up to 6 months. So then the next day, maybe it was 2 days after that. I don't remember. So I don't remember any of this. I just know from what people told me that I came out from a coma, and they like couldn't believe it. And they said, okay, fine, it's really crazy, but I damaged a certain part of my brain, and I would have to basically relearn how to walk, and my speech would be very slurred, so I have to do a lot of speech therapy, and a certain type of thinking that's called constructive thinking or something like that. Like, that was in that same part of my brain, and so I would have to go to a special type of psychologist called a neuropsychologist, to, you know, basically relearn how to do this certain type of thought process. Not like I was going to be like, I wasn't going to be like, you know, like, whatever. Not, I wasn't going to be dumb, but I just have to do a lot of work, a lot of things to work on. Now, that day, I was in bed, first of all. So I basically have two clear memories. I have a lot, but two clear memories from the hospital. And so I'm going to tell you the second one, then I'll tell you the first one. So the second one is, which I'm pretty sure was the day when they said I wasn't going to walk. So my older brother basically saw like how everything the doctor said, the opposite was happening. So they told him, I'm not going to be able to walk, I'm going to have to relearn how to walk. So he was like, okay, yeah, sure, that's what you said. You said he's going to die anyways, and then you said he's going to be in a coma. So like, so I remember my brother, like...
What's his name?
Huh?
What's his name?
Who, my brother? Yeah. Brother's name is Joe. Joseph. Yes. Joseph Benjamin. So we have a lot of whatever they call it, biblical names, like in my family.
Beautiful?
Huh?
Beautiful.
No. one day soon, hopefully, we'll see. So he came over, and he just like, he's like, hey, he's like, Matt, you want to go for a walk? And I was like, yeah, they make me stay in this bed all day. Like, I would love to go for a walk. And so he grabbed me by one arm, and my other arm I was holding on to, I had a thing called a drip, like an IV, and I held on to that. I went out to the hall, and we like walked down the hall. Anyway, I definitely had to walk slow, and it was definitely very hard, but like I went for a walk, and I was just like really happy to finally get out of my bed. And we turned around at the end of the hall to come back to the room, so I remember like a bunch of like doctors like speeding towards us, like people with white coats, I remember like walking very fast towards us, and they're like, Mr. Devlin, like, wow, you're walking, like, how's your balance, are you dizzy, is it whatever? And I was like, why wouldn't I be able to walk? And they're like, wow, you're like speaking perfectly fine. And I was like, why shouldn't I be able to talk? And they're like, okay, they're like, could you come back to your room, please? You want to run some tests. And then like, I don't remember what happened after that, but I remember that. Now, fine. Then, I'll tell you, I'm going to tell you soon. So whatever, they were like really amazed by it. And they were like, fine. Like they thought I was going to have to, now what they had said before they saw me walk and like talking, they thought I was going to have to basically spend maybe up to a year in rehabilitation, like 6 months minimum, up to a year in rehabilitation center, until I was like functioning properly. I basically went there and I spent 1 week there. I remember I went to Erev Shabbos and I left Erev Shabbos. I spent only one week in the rehab, and I was walking fine, talking fine, thinking fine. Speech therapist like saw me after the rehab, so I went to a speech therapist once, and they were like, "I don't know why you're here." And I went to this neuropsychologist, is like a chasheva type of person, like a, you know, it's like a really, it's like an advanced thing. And I saw him, and we did like 2 hours of like all types of tests. It was like, it's a written test, and he showed me pictures and like all different diagrams. It was just like stuff to see your thinking, like how I could do that type of thinking that he was testing. And like afterwards, he's like, "Bichlal, I don't see why they sent you here. Like, this is like," he said that my, "this thought processes of mine in this area is above average from other people." So he's like, "I don't know what, you know, the thing to send you here." So that was that. And then basically 1 month after the accident, so they wanted me to come back to get another CAT scan, to just, you know, to do another check on the brain to make sure things are, you know, it's healing well. Until this point, basically, I felt fine. I was getting headaches once. I was getting headaches, you know, throughout the day. But like Bichlal, I didn't like, I felt pretty good. It wasn't, you know, I didn't have so much problems. Huh?
When are the Hashanah?
This is before Rosh Hashanah. This is still before Rosh Hashanah. So this is a little bit before Rosh Hashanah. It's a good question. He wants to know. He wants to know the time period when this is happening. So I went there, and then the next day we went. Me and my mother went to the doctor to like go over the results. So he comes in, and it's kind of like if anyone here, whatever, Achron Son had to get an X-ray. So when they look, they put it up on the board. They put like on a board with light so they can look at it. So he comes and he puts up two of these things on a board, and he's like looking at them, and like he looks at me like, and he like with a very like shocked look. And my mother's a nurse, so he tells my mother like to come take a look at it. And she also looks very shocked. And he says to me, "I don't know." He's like, "I don't know who's up there. I don't know." He's like, "I don't know if it's God, Moses, Yashka, Buddha, whatever." He's not saying that. He's like, "I don't know who's up there, but he's like, whoever it is, they are definitely looking out for you." And I was like, "Yeah, I know who's looking out for me. Don't worry." And he tells me, "Come over." And he shows me, basically, he said, this is your brain from a month ago, and this is your brain as of yesterday. He showed me, basically, he said, this spot here, this big spot, is like, it was like this hemorrhaging. No, I remember, I remember. Just from the accident and the hospitals when I don't remember. He's like, this is like the bleeding, this is like the hemorrhaging. And also, you could see how your brain's very swollen. And then also, you could see a fracture, means like a crack on the skull, very big. Well, not like big, but whatever, noticeable. Then he said, "This is your brain as of yesterday," and you could see. He said, first of all, the fracture is like barely noticeable. Like he said, it doesn't make sense. Like it's just like already like you can't tell that there was a fracture. And he said, that doesn't make any sense. And he says, and just as big of a pella is the fact that the hemorrhaging is like gone completely. I wouldn't even know it's there unless you told me to look for it. Only because you told me to look for it, I can tell that there is a slight issue. He's like, this is what it should look like. At least, he said, first of all, the one from this one here, the one from the 30 days earlier, he's like, that's someone who should not be alive. Forget about it. That's someone who should not be alive. And even if you did live, he said, this current X-ray, whatever, CAT scan, this is what you should look like a year or two from now. If you still would have lived and you were still in a coma, then you would have been healed. Like, whatever, it was a big amazing. It was like, whatever. Basically, it was a lot of nisim and nifloys that happened. Now, what happened, basically, the first memory I have in the hospital, like the first and like basically only other clear memory I have in the hospital, is I remember waking up, and basically, this is what I remember. I was in the car with my friend going to longboard, and then I just remember like opening my eyes, and I'm like in a bed, and there's like tubes. I have tons of like stuff in my wrists and in my chest, and like I have like a neck brace, and like I was connected to a lot of machines and stuff, and I was like, I have a hospital gown, and I'm like, whoa, like what happened? Like I thought I was just going to skateboard. Like I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in the hospital. Like something must have happened to me. Like, and it was really weird because no one was in the room. So it was a shkacha process. But I'm saying it was like really weird because my family told me people were in the room constantly, like 24 hours. My family was like there with me. So I looked around, I was like, hey, no one's, I have to call someone, I have to tell my family, okay, where's my phone? And okay, like, I don't see, I had a backpack with me that day. So I was like, okay, like, where's my bag? Like, I want my cell phone. I have to call my family or someone, tell them. And so I look around and I see on the bedstand, and my wallet is sitting on my bedstand. I was like thinking, why did they leave me my wallet? Like, I had a backpack with like my clothes and like my cell phone, and I had like a magazine. Like, why didn't they leave me that stuff? Why did they leave my wallet here? And I'm in a hospital. What do I need a wallet for? So I pick up my wallet. And just like thinking, like, what is it doing here? Huh? So I pick up my wallet and I'm just like thinking, like, what is it doing here? And just like I flip it open, and in the ID slot I have the picture of the Rebbe that, you know, Mendy gave me in Starbucks, you know, when he first showed me the picture of the Rebbe from, you know, month, you know, whatever amount of months earlier. And saying, even though I fried out, it was like, it's the Rebbe. I'm not taking a picture of the Rebbe out of my wallet. I still walk around with a picture of the Rebbe. Like, so I saw the picture and I was like, Matasio, you thought you'd either do that almost and you do what you want. Okay, fine, and you did. The Rebbe doesn't leave the Daramus of his chassid. The Rebbe is watching over the Yidden, taking care of us, is making sure that we're going in the Nation's Veg. Sometimes he has to push us a little bit in, you know, back onto it, but the Rebbe is taking care of us. So then after I was done in the rehab, saying that was like something I was like thinking about constantly. And after I was done at the rehab center and moved home or whatever, so I wasn't like running to go like become frum again, but I was thinking more about, you know, I have to, you know, start doing more mitzvahs and I have to start this. I started wrapping tefillin more. And whatever, about a week, after like a week or two when I was back home, so this shliach that was in Adar Torah, he came to visit me and he brought also one of the bachrim from Adar Torah. So whatever, so I was like, okay, I put on a yarmulke. Like, I was like very embarrassed, like a yid should see me without a yarmulke. So like I put on a yarmulke, and he tells me, he asked me, he's like at my house, whatever, and he asks me, you know, he's like, who's the shliach here in New York? And I was like, I mean, I don't think there is one. It's like a small place. Like, I think I would know if there was. Like, there's yid in here, but I would know if there's a shliach. So he's like, well, how about we look it up? So we looked up Chabad.org. Turns out he knows the shliach. Him and the shliach are both in Pittsburgh. So he knows, he knows the shliach. It was his teacher when he was a kid. So he calls him up and he's like, hey, he's like, Rabbi Green, you know, there's this Jew here in New York you should meet. And he's like, what do you mean? I know every Jew in New York. He's a shliach in my town, and he's in another city, which he lives in the other city, which is 40 minutes away. So he says, what do you mean? I know every Jew in New York. He's like, no, you don't. There's him and his 10 brothers and sisters. By the way, I have 10 brothers and sisters. He's like, there's him and his 10. Plus me, he's 11. There's 11 altogether. So he says, he has him and his 10 siblings and his mother, and that's 12 Jews. That's 12 Jews, and you don't know about any of them. He's like, okay, I have to come meet them. So he gets in his car. He gets his car right then and there. It's rush hour, and the only way to get there is from his place to my place is on a highway, which is like very, very a lot of traffic, because part of the highway has traffic lights. So it's like very, very a lot of traffic. It takes a long time. And whatever, he got his car, he came to see me, and it was already like in 2 weeks, it was Rosh Hashanah. So he invites me to come to his Chabad house, Rosh Hashanah. In the other city where he lives. And well, of course, I asked him, you know, could I come next week to Yom Kippur? To come to Sukkot and start going every week. And in the meantime, I went back to high school. I went to a different high school, a public school. So it's a different type of school. You don't have to like sit in class and learn. You like work. You learn you sit in a big classroom and everyone's learning on their own, and there's like a few teachers that go ask questions too. You finish a lesson, you take a test, whatever. It's a different type of method. So I did that and I started going to the Chabad house and whatever. I started becoming frum again, obviously. And meanwhile, I'm still living at home. And I did that whole year of high school in about 2 months. And I was already now like, whatever, going there with like tzitzis and yarmulke, basically, to this public school. And I basically got accepted to a college near the shliach, and then the shliach was gonna let me live in his guest house, and then I got a job also nearby at a grocery store where this shliach is. So I'm gonna go to school part time, work a little bit, and like be by the shliach and, you know, help out the shliach and whatever. Then what happened was I realized like I want to go to Crown Heights for Shabbos, and I was gonna be starting this whole thing, moving to where the shliach is in like a month away, and. So whatever, I wanna go to Crown Heights. I haven't been to Crown Heights in a while. So it was the week of the college campus weekend thing. So I came to Crown Heights, and I remember getting off the subway, getting off the bus in Manhattan, getting on the subway, and like getting very excited, like, okay, like getting, I hadn't been in Crown Heights in months, and I was like, this is like, you know, X amount of stops, and like every stop, I was like, ah, there's only 10 stops, 9 stops, like every stop, like getting more and more excited, like gonna be in Crown Heights, and there was Don Amos on the beat. And I remember like getting off the subway and like, mom, I just like running like into 770, just like, it was like, but that feeling, like that's when we realized like, this is my home. This is where Chassid belongs. Because I remember when I first went home, when I went to visit home before I left yeshiva and moved home, I hadn't been home in months. And I remember that feeling, what it was like when I got off the bus, my sister picked me up, and every traffic light to realize how closer I am to my home. It was very exciting. I hadn't been home in a long time. But is Bein Arich to what it was like when I came to Crown Heights, I haven't been here in a while. That to realize this is where Chassid should be, this is where Abach is supposed to be here in the Rebbe's Daran, to be here learning yeshiva in the Rebbe's Shechuna, davening with the Rebbe, for banging with the Rebbe. I was like, that's it, like, I'm moving back, like, listen, I'm coming back to yeshiva, like, I'm moving back here. Fine. So I was like, after Shabbos, I was like, okay, this could be a little bit too much, could be the Yitzhar also, you know, the Yitzhar also sometimes dresses up, you know, with the kapata and comes to fool us. The next week, Thursday night, I tell my mother, I'm like, mom, I'm going to Crown Heights again for Shabbos. So you have to remember, it's not like it's an hour away. I'm saying it's a 4-hour bus ride from there to here, to Manhattan, and then you know. So my mother's like, you just went there, like you can't just like run away and like travel hours and hours away every week. I'm gonna drive you to Lancaster. She'll drive me to the Chabad house every week. She's like, I'm gonna drive you to Lancaster, and you're gonna go there for Shabbos. So I was like, fine. She drove me to Lancaster. I got out of her van. When she pulled away, I walked to the bus stop. I got on the bus and I came to Crown Heights. So, I cut it very close. I like got out of the subway and it was like a minute till. It was like a minute till Shkia. And after that Shabbos, I was like, that's it, like, this is where I belong, I have to come back to yeshiva. I came back to yeshiva, I spent that year and the next year in the Dara Torah, I learned in Oli Torah for a year, I was in Chayvei Smicha last year, I'm in 770 this year. Fine, so that's that.